Korean. Is Jesu older than Hyunsik?
No.
He bit his lip, thinking. Jay rubbed at his face. If anything, his hand seemed to spread the tired from his eyes down to his mouth and cheeks.
Younger. A year, I think. Maybe less.
So your mom was... It was a delicate conversation, one I didn't think I could maneuver through without damaging Jay's sensibilities. Okay, your mom had an affair with a married guy and got knocked up. And now your uncle, third cousin, whatever, wants his grown son to step into the family business because the original model is dead?
Yeah, Jay nodded. Uncle's sent my mother money to support Jesu. Now she feels like he's being taken away from her, and she's going to lose whatever hold she has left over Uncle, and probably any money he'd been sending her. I don't know. It's complicated. How do I tell her I love men, now, when it looks like I'm the only son she has left?
Fucking hell. Jay's mother already had a tenuous hold on reality. Losing a meal ticket would send her over the edge. Losing Jay, however, would kill me. So you came here to break it off with me. Made sense in Jay's mind. My guts weren't too fond of the plan, but I had to admit his logic. Going to be honest with you, I'm kinda glad you couldn't go through with it.
What changed your mind? I want to be happy, Kola.
Resting his cheek on my arm, he stared up into my face. The old-fashioned lights along the walk were on, pouring a soft, yellow glow through the living room windows. It softened the agony lines on his face, although not as much as the smile he gave me when he touched my face with his fingertips.
I want to be happy with you. I want. You've made me want things I can't have, and now when I feel like I'm losing everything, that I have to lose everything, you're still here. Holding me. Loving me. And that hurts, Kola. As much as I love having you, it breaks me inside.
It was time to be brave. Even if it broke me, I had to be... a man.
Do you want me to let you go?
Jay's guileless brown gaze raked over my face, searching for something I didn't know if he'd find. If he wanted me to let him go, I would. I was tired too, but if he needed me to be, I'd be strong enough to walk away. Or at least walk until he couldn't see me. Then I'd be able to stumble into the broken glass he'd left behind for me to fall on.
No, Aki.
Jay twisted on my lap, straddling my thighs. Placing his palms on my cheek, he kissed me. After months of having him in my life, his kisses could still take my breath away. When he was done, I decided breathing was really highly overrated. So, no, then. I cocked my head, staring up at the pretty-faced, feral man who could only tell me he loved me in Korean. Because, I'm telling you, once you say, "No, Cole, don't let me go," that's a done deal. You're never going to be able to get rid of me. He brought his lips close to mine so I could feel his mouth moving against mine and said,
"No, Kola, don't ever let me go."
This time it was my kiss that stole the air from our lungs, and Jay somehow ended up underneath me and pinned to the couch. His hands were in my hair, twisting about and pulling me closer, refusing to let me up. Our tongues fought their own battle, ignorant of the explosive sex we'd already shared. My cock stirred, telling me it was ready for round two. I ignored it. Sometimes it was all about the kissing and cuddles, especially when a certain feral Korean needed to be held.
I need to be this man with you, Koa, a man who loves men. And it scares me. It scares me so deep inside. I am cold from the fear of it, but he whispered in the deepening darkness. I want to come home to you. When we're here, I feel safe. I feel wanted. You make me doubt when I'm happy because I feel like I can't hold it inside of me. Being with you is like my soul coming with happiness. Does that make any sense?
It makes total sense. I bit his chin, getting him to laugh. If it makes you feel any better, you make my soul come, too.
Good to know. I'm not the only one, then.
He laughed again. A sharp sound, but freer than I'd heard in a long time.
What am I going to do? My mother... This would kill her, I know it. But even if I'm not... Jesu, she depends on me.
Mostly, I thought, she used him for money. But that was my take on their relationship. Is Tiffany going to stay with you?
No.
Jay shook his head.
She has to go back. She has school, but my mother... She's not well.
If she wanted to stay, she can stay here with me. With us, I offered. And even in the shadows, Jay's glance drizzled hot sarcasm over my sincerity. I'm serious. Hell, there's enough room for both of your sisters. If you think your mom can't be trusted with them anymore, we'll move them in, whatever you need.
And if I need to move someplace large enough for my sisters but not here, you'd be okay with that too?
No. Making a face, I gave myself points for honesty. I wasn't going to let myself feel elation. It burbled up from some fragment of hope I couldn't seem to kill over the past week. Damned hope didn't spring eternal. It grew like fucking kudzu in places I couldn't reach. But if that's what you need, then... Yeah. Okay, I'll do that with you too. Jay would need time. He was always cautious, warily easing into something new after viewing it from all angles. The only time he lost himself was behind a camera, and when we were making love. As passions went, they were limited, but he threw everything he had into those moments. Seeing him lose control, and knowing I'd brought him there, it fed my ego like nothing else did.
You make me feel like being nothing to my family is worth it. I have to get used to that. I have to learn how that feels.
He sniffed it at himself and made a face.
Can you make me some tea? Or should I shower first? I smell.
How about if you hop into the shower and I'll bring you up your tea? Leering at him, I waggled my eyebrows. Or maybe we can just go have hot piggy bunny sex in the shower and then I can make you tea?
Piggy bunnies do not have hot sex,
Jay grumbled, sliding off of me. I missed his warmth, but he was right, we were odoriferous. If anything should have hot sex, it should be piggy bunnies, I stood, hugging him from behind and biting the velvety skin of his nape. Bacon and rabbits, both very conducive to the smexy. Come on, I'll even show you where they got the word porking from. Jay left me with kisses and a promise to call me. He took my heart with him, too, but I didn't mind. The Dr. Pepper shirt I was beginning to miss, but he'd claimed it as his. He also left me the cat. The morning dawned, and other than my muscles aching from being stretched over Jay's body, I was feeling pretty good. "Don't give me that look," I told Nico when she came down to investigate my boots. "Your daddy came by, fed you again like you needed it, and you're going to sleep off that fat belly. You're not even going to know I'm gone." She meowed a complaint at me. It could have been about anything, from the price of salmon to the state of my socks. With Nico, one never really knew. Bobby opened the door without knocking. He had a key and wasn't too shy to use it. Leaning over to switch the cat, he looked up the length of my legs, raking his gaze up my body until he got to my face, then smirked.
"You had a booty call."
"You have booty calls," I grumbled, sitting down on the hallway bench to pull on my boots. "I make love, especially where Jay's concerned."
"Did you call him?"
the foyer light caught on a few silver strands in Bobby's close shorn hair.
Or did he call you?
Neither, I admitted. He was waiting for me on the front porch.
Huh. So he pretty much knew it was a sure thing, then?
Bobby buffed his nails on his chest, posturing against the banister. His bulk blocked out most of the light I needed to see my shoelaces. I pinched him in the ass. I couldn't get much meat through his jeans, but it was enough of a squeeze to get him to move. He shifted, but only to block more of the light.
Dick. Asshole. Bobby countered. You guys good then? Kissed and made it all better?
No, not better. I cocked my head to look at him. Different. We're in a different place now. He's struggling still, but at least now he knows that I'm here with him. It feels stronger, more solid. My insides don't have tentacles in them anymore.
Just don't get hurt, kid. Jay's too pretty for me to kick his teeth in. I'd feel bad.
Bobby's rough, handsome face softened, and he smiled crookedly at me.
But, could you hurry up, princess? We've got a woman to interrogate.
We're not interrogating her, I remind Bobby. I just want to ask Madame Sun a few questions and give her my condolences about Vivian. I tried calling her, but it goes straight to a messaging service. They told me she'll be in, but isn't seeing anyone. She's probably taking it pretty hard. Koreatown was becoming my second home. If my cases kept circling back to the Wilshire area, I was going to have to give a zip code discount. During the day, the area was a bit more businesslike, stashing away its glitter. Approaching early evening, the district was beginning to loosen up with small crowds of people walking to bars and restaurants. We had just passed by a 24-hour dumpling soup place when Bobby hit me up for some information.
Why am I coming with you again? You know, other than that you probably can't drive because your dick's been peeled off and it hurts to pee.
I wanted to see if you could ask anyone who works around Sun's place if they've seen anything funky, I explained. Kill two birds with one stone. I need to see if she knew about Yunjun's pregnancy or if Gyeongsi is connected to Mae Choi somehow, but mostly to extend my condolences about Vivian. She's probably not in the mood to talk much if she's there at all.
If she's not, then you owe me some lunch.
Bobby steered around a lumbering MTS bus. If she is, I'll still buy you lunch.
Nothing Asian. I want something with some meat in it.
Dude, Korean food is practically all meat. They even put meat in the damn pancakes. My stomach rumbled at the thought of a steaming kimjjeong. You have to ask for stuff without meat. Bobby stretched his mouth out into a satisfied half-smile.
Excellent. Then Korean's fine.
Oh, I should have gotten some flowers. Fuck, it was the one rule Jay hammered into my head. Actually, it was pretty much a universal rule. Someone dies, you bring flowers. Or a casserole. When Rick died, I had enough frostbitten casseroles in my freezer to make pucks for an entire hockey league. Do you give the boss flowers, or do you ask for the family's information?
I'd go with the family,
Bobby suggested.
Good way to find out if Vivian was seeing anyone, too. She might have been dating someone connected to all this. Hell, for all we know, she's hooked up with someone who's using Sun's clients for easy marks.
It was a good plan. A very good plan. Except for one little hiccup. By the time we got to Madame Sun's salon, the cops had beaten us there, and someone from the coroner's office was wheeling a dead body out of the building on a squeaking gurney. Chapter 12.
Okay, princess,
Bobby sneered playfully as he parked.
Looks like you've killed another one.
Fuck you, I muttered, getting out of his truck. Unlike Gyeongsi's crayon-bright spa bungalow, Madame Sun saw her clients in a professional building off of Arolo and Wilshire. It was one of those tall, blue glass buildings that made people nervous during an earthquake, casting a long enough shadow onto the street that the cheap, fast-food restaurants living under its skirt never saw the light of day. The smell of garbage and fried potatoes greeted us when we hit the sidewalk, and I'd gone about 4 steps before one of Los Angeles's finest stopped me. She was a pert-bodied woman, a Californian blonde with a tan, and her hair pulled back in a ponytail under the uncomfortable hat some asshole bean counter thought would look sharp with the equally uncomfortable, ill-fitting uniform. I could literally smell the new coming off of her, blood in the water that most veteran cops sneered at, forgetting a time when they'd not worn the creases out of their street blues. As I expected, Bobby's sneer grew wider, especially when she squared her shoulders off and approached us, her hand on the butt of her gun.
"You remember being that young?"
he asked, jerking his chin at her. "Remember? Fuck, I still am." I met his smirk with one of my own. "You're the old man, not me."
"Sir, I'm gonna have to ask you..."
She'd gotten that much out of her mouth when a familiar face broke away from the pack of cops milling around the building's entrance and hailed Bobby.
"Dawson!"
The last time I'd seen Detective Del O'Byrne, she had busted my chops about one of Grace Kim's victims. A tanned, lean woman with strong Latino features and dark, sharp eyes, she was a cop's cop. No nonsense and blunt. A cop either pulled their own weight or got out of her way. She was the kind of woman one expected to be wearing a bat cowl or wielding a golden lasso. If she were a man, Bobby would have been in love. As it was, she made me seriously consider switching teams. If only she didn't dislike me so much. Her long legs crossed the sea of concrete separating us. "Stand aside, Martin. He's one of ours."
"Yes, sir,"
the blonde mumbled, stepping back. "You can shoot the other one, though." O'Byrne gave me the eye, a smile tugging her mouth.
"Dawson, don't I have enough trash around my crime scene? You gotta drag in some more?"
"Princess, you remember Dell, don't you?"
Bobby gave the detective a quick, manly hug, the tight shoulder-to-shoulder pat he'd give any of his fellow cops.
"Good to see you, kid."
"Yeah, we know each other."
She looked down her nose, assessing me for misdeeds. "I almost arrested him for murder once."
"Didn't do it,"
I grinned, holding up my hands. Bobby glanced around, taking in the swarm of blues.
"Aren't you a bit out of your district, O'Byrne?"
"Nope, got transferred in last night."
The detective shrugged and jerked her thumb toward the building. "Jenkins dropped dead at his desk yesterday, and the brass decided to expedite my request to transfer up. It's closer to home, so I won't have to fight the 405 every day."
"Jenkins is dead?"
Bobby whistled under his breath.
"Phew, shit, that's a shock. He was so close to retirement, too."
"How is it a shock?" I stared at Bobby as if he was insane. From what I'd remembered of the man, Jenkins' hands were yellow from smoking, and he didn't eat anything that wasn't deep-fried or covered in mayonnaise. The man was a walrus. He rolled his chair into the bathroom and peed into the urinal from it, then wheeled back.
"Respect for the fallen, McGinnis, even the walruses,"
O'Byrne chastised me, but she gave me a wink to soften the blow. "I got a 217 here. The intended Vic's son was in the bathroom when the mother was attacked. He grabbed one of those brass urns people put on their lobby tables and beat the shit out of the guy's head. Couple of bashes and our assault and burglary suspect becomes a 419. EMTs pronounced him DOA as soon as they hit the floor. Coroner just got here."
"Shit, that's rough. Is the mother okay?"
Bobby glanced at the gurney being loaded into the deathmobile.
"I can see that guy's not."
"Well, she's a bit shaken up." Tapping lightly at my arm with her notebook, Dell asked, "My question is, what are you two doing here? It can't be for the fabulous cuisine unless there's something about that Burger King I don't know."
"Nah, Princess here's got a client in the building."
He grunted when I nudged him in the ribs with my elbow.
"Let me guess, your client's Park Hyun-sun?"
Del blew out her cheeks when I nodded.
"Why did I know that?"
"Because the universe hates you?" I suggested, and she very unprofessionally flipped me off. "Are you guys done with her? I'd like to see her. Her assistant was murdered yesterday."
"Yeah,"
Del consulted her notes. "Vivian Na, drive-by through a street-facing window in a cafe. Wong caught that one." "Yeah, so did I." I made a face back at her when she grimaced dramatically. "I was meeting her to talk about Madame Sun's case, and next thing I know, she's bled out and there's other Vicks on the ground. I'd like to see her if I could. I was the last one to see her assistant alive. I'd like her to know it was quick." "Let me see what I can do." O'Byrne became all cop, curtly nodding. "Follow me. We've got her and the son in a conference room on the third floor. Let me clear it with her, and maybe you can talk to her." We cooled our heels for only a few minutes. In that time, Bobby got a proposition from a tranny dressed in a low neckline aqua sequin dress, and I'd been given a plastic daisy and a mini rubber duck by an old woman waiting for a bus. The tranny had 5 o'clock shadow, thick enough to grate cheese on, and his dress was so short his dirty mud-gray BVDs flashed every time he took a step. All in all, I scored with the daisy and the duck. "McGinnis!" Dill poked her head out of the building's side entrance. "Come on, you've got 5 minutes." I hurried. For all I knew, she had an Amazonian spear she could chuck from where she was standing and pin me down to the cement. I wouldn't put it past her. Bobby stayed behind to talk shop. Any plan for him to wander the halls and hit up other businesses for information was blown. O'Byrne had a uniform lead me to a glass-enclosed conference room on the second floor. It was one of those rent-to-impress places a building had for its tenants to use. From the looks of the faded carpet, there wasn't much impressing to be had. At some point in its life, the place had been a spotless, gleaming edifice of glass, polish, and swank. Now it sagged, a tired old woman whose breasts brushed the top of her knees. Still, someone had tried to keep her spirits up, layering a spackle of thick, bright white paint to hide her wrinkles, but her age was carved too deep into her skin. The conference room held 3 occupants, a grim-faced uniform cop, the middle-aged Korean man I'd seen waiting for Madame Sun, and the grand dame herself. From the grief pouring from every inch on her face, I suddenly wished I'd bought out a flower shop, if only to give her a little joy. Joy was going to be a long time coming to the droop-shouldered old woman I saw curled up in the conference chair at the end of the room. Madame Sun had aged at least 20 years since I'd last seen her. Her skin was a pasty gray, carved in with deep lines around her eyes and mouth. Crinkled cracks formed in her thick makeup, the edges flaking off onto the dark table, and her clothes were slightly askew, as if she'd been tugging at her sleeves or hem. Sun's helmet hair sat unevenly on her head, the right side a little bit higher than the left, and she sat nearly still, except for the frenetic play of her fingers twisting her rings and bracelets. Her son didn't seem to be in much better shape. He stood when I approached, automatically reaching for my hand when I held it out for a shake. His fingers were cold against my palm, and they shook slightly when he came in for the grip. His eyes were as red as his mother's, his long lashes spiked with drying salt. "I'm sorry," seemed like such a small thing to say. A single spit of water being dropped into a portal to hell. I said it anyway, and he thinned his lips, forcing his emotions back down his throat.
"Thank you for coming, Mr. McGinnis," he murmured. "I'm James Bond."
"Madame Sun's son," I acknowledged. "You picked her up at my office."
"Yes."
His nod was curt, his eyes drifting over to his mother's crumpled form.
"The detective said you wanted to speak to us, and my mother."
"Vivian,
I'm sorry for your loss." I had hated hearing that at the small memorial service we'd had for Rick after I got out of the hospital. Even 2 months after his shooting, the death gutted me. Loss was the stupidest fucking word to describe the emptiness inside of me. And here I was, parroting out an ingrained cliché phrase like I was whoring for a cracker. Clearing my throat, I tried for a more personal touch.
"Did you know Vivian Long?"
"Long?"
James's expression churned together his grief with immense confusion.
"I've known her all my life. She was my sister."
James and the uniform left me alone with Madame Sun. The older woman murmured a need for tea and privacy, and her son immediately jumped to action. Before taking the cop with him, James put his fingers over his mother's and kissed her temple, reassuring her that he would take care of her. From the slight cuts on his hand from the urn he'd smashed over the intruder's head, I'd say he had a good start. Sliding out one of the leather conference room chairs, I sat down next to Madame Sun, angling my seat to face her. The cushion squeaked as I lowered myself into it, nearly rocking back before it adjusted to take my weight. Amid the creaking and squalling, I searched for some place to start. There were so many things going through my mind. I couldn't find the one thread leading to the core of the Gordian knot James had tossed into my lap. I didn't have to search for long. Madam Sun not only found the end, but began knitting me a mental sweater to wear with the tangled threads of her past few weeks. First, she had to ask the one question that bubbled up every time someone died unexpectedly. I know. It was the first one I'd asked when I found out Rick truly was gone.
Did she suffer?
If anything, Sun's hands were colder than her son's, and they clutched mine with a frenzied strength.
You were the last one to see her. Did she know? Was it?
She never knew, I murmured, patting her shaking hands. It was very sudden. I'm sorry I didn't come sooner. I should have come to you that morning. I'm sorry.
No. No, it is okay.
Her hair bobbed when she shook her head, throwing the carefully sculpted curls further out of place.
You didn't know. No one really knew. She was always troubled about being my daughter. Even now, her dying has left behind problems. I loved her, but my daughter was hard to like. Nothing was good enough. She always needed the best. I gave her a job because she needed to work, but she never liked doing it. She wanted to do other things.
I wanted to ask you a few questions. I tested the waters. Now that I knew Vivian Na was Madame Sun's daughter, her death was even more intimately connected to the other murders in my head. If Wong didn't see it, then he wasn't as smart as I thought he was. If you don't mind.
No. Please, ask.
Sun sniffed, wiping at the tears cutting deeper through her makeup.
The police, they don't have any idea who killed her. And today, that man, he looked like someone who would know Vivian's boyfriend. She had many, and none of them were good. And this last one, Park Hong-Chul, he is the worst of them. I thought maybe that man upstairs belonged to Hong-Chul's gang. They are Bom Jeja, criminals.
He's a Korean, then, the man who attacked you? I scribbled Park Hong-Chul in my notes, drawing a line from his name to Vivian's.
Yes, but I don't know him. Vivian might have. I wonder if he was the one who...
She swallowed, her throat wobbling.
If he was the one who shot her, then I am glad Jinwoo, James, killed him. I am sorry my son has blood on his hands, but he is a good son. That man would have killed me, like he probably killed my daughter. It is too much of a coincidence, yes?
It was. There were too many bodies piling up with matching bullet wounds. Theoretically, Wong hadn't come back with any news about ballistics or eyewitnesses claiming a one-armed man fled the scene, but it seemed like it wasn't only my gut saying things were connected. Yeah, it's too much of a coincidence, Madam Sun. Probing further, I asked, "Do you know who Vivian was going to meet up with the night she died?"
"Maybe James? Sometimes she would have dinner with her girlfriends, and James would go along."
"Could she have been going to see her boyfriend?"
"No. No, she broke it off with Hong-Chul. Do you think he might have killed her because she left him?"
From what I remembered of Vivian Na, she'd been dressed to kill, not to be killed. A woman didn't dress up like that to have a cup of coffee with a detective. No, she was definitely on the prowl, either to catch herself another guy, or perhaps to coax the one she'd tossed aside to come to heel. Or I could have been totally off base, and that was what she always wore to a family dinner. "I don't know," I admitted slowly. "Was Hong-Chul violent to her?"
"He is a criminal,"
she spat, rage edging away her sorrow for a brief moment.
"She would never talk about him to me. Everything was, it's none of your business, and you don't need to know. But there were times when I would see bruises on her arms. She would say she hurt herself, but I know he had something to do with it."
"I have to ask you, Madam Sun, why didn't you tell me Vivian was your daughter?" I needed her to focus without trampling all over her grief.
"She wasn't my husband."
As shame went, Sons went deep. She crumpled in on herself, nearly folding in half. Her voice cracked under the weight of her pain, and I reached over to place my arm across her shoulders. You don't have to.
No, no, she sniffled. She was a mistake. I made a mistake, but she paid for it.
I'm sure you did your best. I hated to admit it, but crying women could pretty much write a check and cash in my soul. Son's tears stung me.
I did nothing, she insisted. My husband, James's father, left me, and I couldn't raise two children. My sister took Vivian as her own. Vivian found out I was her mother 5 years ago. That was when she came here. I asked her to give me a chance to be her mother. She wanted to be here, but not with me. I was just convenient. But I tried. I would give anything to have her back with me. Even if she hated me, she was still my daughter.
How did James get along with her?
James?
Son looked confused.
Fine. He liked her. She was good with men. Even her brother, she was nice to him.
Son went back to twisting her rings.
They grew up thinking they were cousins. They were never close, but when she came over to live here, he was good to her. A true brother. He's a good son.
He defended you today. Holding her wrist to stop her nervous wringing, I stroked her papery skin to calm her. That's the sign of a good son. A good man. You should be proud of who you raised. Do you know how Vivian met Hong Chul? Maybe at a bar, some place where he hangs out? It might be a good place to start looking for him.
Oh, no. She met him here.
Her mouth twisted into a sour wrinkle.
He brought his grandfather for a reading. I told you about him. He was Bak Bong Cho, the man who died in his office from a heart attack.
Shit. And the Gordian knot just retangled itself. Park Hong-chul would have motive to kill Vivian Na if he was upset over their breakup, and there definitely could have been family dynamics to lead to his father's death, but... oh, everything was too nebulous. Plus, there was nothing to indicate his grandfather's death had been anything but natural. I also had nothing to connect Choi and Lee. Since Choi and Gyeong-si shared the same last name, there could have been something there, and my instincts told me Lee wasn't carrying her husband's bundle of joy. She'd probably fallen for Gyeong-si's manipulations and found herself enceinte. I was stuck with two suspects, Gyeong-si and Hong-chul, and with only the slimmest of motives when I had them. Now wasn't the time to press Madam Sun on Gyeong-si. I'd have to wait until she'd had time to deal with her daughter's murder.
That man, the one James hit, he was going to kill me. I know it. James stopped him.
She met my gaze, her eyes drowning in her tears.
Do you think it's over? The deaths? Was Vivian the last one, do you think?
I don't know that either, I confessed. If the man who attacked you today is connected to Vivian's, the cops will find out.
The police? They don't agree that this is all together, all connected. How can they not see this?
The tears began again, turning the pancake chasms on her face to rivers.
You have to find out who killed her, Gyeong-si. Someone killed her. How could they just take her away from me before I had the chance to make it all better? I didn't have a chance to get her to love me. Isn't that what all mothers want, for their children to love them?
I left Madam Sun in her son's hands. James had nothing to add. Finding out Vivian was his sister had been a surprise, but he had accepted her into his life because it made his mother happy. A good son, his mother said. The perfect Korean son. It made me wonder what secrets he was hiding. I spent the rest of the next day chasing down dead-end leads and paying bills. Wong wasn't answering any of my calls about the case, and I was hitting a dead end on Gyeong-si. There was nothing on the internet about why he'd left Korea, or if there was, it wasn't in any language I could read. By mid-afternoon, Martin's kids hit the office for a couple of hours, bringing with them a blueberry pie their grandmother, Claudia, baked for me. I thanked them profusely, and I got a patented Claudia smirk in return.
"Are you kidding? It's all Nana's doing,"
Sissy snorted at me.
"If she doesn't go back to work soon, we're all going to be rolling around like Violet Beauregard." Ah, that was my favorite book as a kid.
I trailed off when I caught the looks of confusion the teens threw me.
"There's a book?"
Mo cocked his head.
"I liked the first movie. That remake was kind of weird, but hey, River Full of Chocolate, nothing wrong with that."
"Yeah, okay." I waved them off, feeling old. "I'm going to take my pie and go home now." People were starting to flow back into the neighborhood, coming home from their day jobs or from carting their children to soccer. The granola chick coffee shop across the street from my office was having a brisk business, the early tide of bearded hipsters and their fuzzy armpitted girlfriends taking up most of the cafe's outdoor seating. A particularly enterprising beanpole of a man had set up his guitar in the hopes of filling his case with tips. From the screeching twangs coming from his instrument, he'd be there a long time before he made enough for a single cup of joe. Juggling the pie, I hopscotched over my front lawn, taking note of where the newly laid sod wasn't catching. One of the bushes blown to ribbons by Grace Kim seemed to be thriving, sending out green shoots from its stubby branches. I patted it as I went by. The landscapers wanted to yank it up by the roots, but I wanted to give it a chance. We were both survivors. Although from the look of things, the bush was doing better than I was. My side ached a bit from sitting in traffic, and I promised my tense back and legs a run once I fed the cat and put away the pie. That all went to shit when a car door slammed behind me, and I turned my shoulders to see who it was, still tuned up to violence so soon after the shooting that took Claudia down. A sedan parked by my curb had the look of a rental car, a nondescript beige two-door chunk of metal no one with any personality would buy for themselves. The car quickly faded from my attention. No, what held me firmly to the ground, clutching a plastic film-wrapped pie as if it were my long-lost teddy bear, was the young man coming around the trunk side of the vehicle. The face he wore was a bit like mine, but more importantly, nearly an exact echo of Mike's. Lankier than Mike, he probably stood a few inches taller as well. Dressed in Doc Martens, jet-black jeans, and a gray T-shirt with the words L'Arc-en-Ciel on it, he would have blended in with the hipsters across the street, except that his jaw-length red-streaked ebony hair was clean, and his chin was bare of any scruff. I couldn't see a patch of his milky-skinned arms through the tattoos running up from his wrists and disappearing under his short sleeves. They were bright, blending seamlessly from one image into the next, and in some cases they shimmered together until I couldn't tell exactly what I was looking at. He drew close enough to see we had the same mouth, and I fought the urge to throw the pie in his face. It was a good pie. No one could bake like Claudia, but right in that moment it would have been worth it. I was not ready for him, not after the week I'd just had. The evening I'd had the night before, and the day I'd spent wading through blood and other people's dirty laundry. "Hello, Kenjiro." He slowed his approach, drawing up in front of me. It was impossible to read his face, but a hint of friendliness ghosted through his eyes. "Yeah, I know who you are. I just wasn't expecting you." That was the understatement of the year, but as Bobby would say, time to pull up my big boy panties and man up. Jerking my head toward the front door of my house, I said, "Well, since you're here, Ichiro, might as well come in for some pie, and you can tell me why you came over." Chapter 13. He wasn't what I expected. Actually, he was nothing like I expected. The tattoos, the silver rings on his fingers, and the bad boy cut of his scarlet, sooty hair was odd, and so not a part of the image I'd had in my mind for my mother's youngest son. I wasn't sure what to say as he watched me cut into the pie Claudia baked for me. pursing his mouth at its bright blue color. It was too odd to see parts of me and Mike on somebody else.
I don't think I've ever had fresh blueberries before.
His English was nearly flawless, but with an odd cant to it, different than Jay's. It wasn't hard to understand him, just different. I wondered if our mother sounded like him, if I would have grown up listening to the peculiar cadence and somehow mimicked it in my own speech.
Not in a pie. It smells good.
Claudia, my... She's kind of like an aunt, made it, I replied. The whole scene was too domestic to be real. I plated a couple of slices, put them on one of the dining trays Jay liked to use, and pulled two cups of coffee from the brewing pot. I tossed a handful of the sugar packets and creamer cups I'd stolen from the front office onto the tray and jerked my head toward the living room. Head over that way. Nico decided to join us. I'd say it was my stellar company, but the truth was she liked sucking up the creamer from the cups. I opened one for her, set it on the chest, and stroked her fur while Ichiro mixed up his coffee. He chucked her under the chin when she went over to investigate his coffee and smiled when the damned cat declined his advances, returning to her own creamer. I flipped on the sound system, keeping the volume low. I skipped over the playlists until I found one of Jay's and felt the tension slip down my shoulders and away from my back at the now familiar burble of Korean playing through the house. Letting G-Dragon howl about getting his crayon, I settled back down, moving Nico's tail out of my pie.
"I like that you named her Nico."
He leaned back, cradling his cup and studying the pie. "She came that way." I probably sounded like an asshole. And I still wasn't sure where the whole "come on in and let me give you pie" courtesy came from. I blamed Jay. God knows I'd never been the crinoline skirts and pearls type. Of course, I'd never say that about him. Out loud. We're working on our relationship, see. I expect her to be a pet, and she expects me to be her slave. We're trying to find a common ground.
I wish you luck with that, brother.
Ichiro saluted me with his coffee cup. Yeah, about that brother thing. The pie didn't hold my interest, which was a shame, because I had a weakness for blueberries. Okay, a weakness for pie in general, but blueberries were right up there. How long are we supposed to have polite conversation before you tell me why you showed up here?
Depends. He pursed his mouth, thinking a moment. Are we going by American or Japanese standards?
Well, how long would this shit take Japanese style?
We'd probably be here until one of us is a grandfather if we do this Japanese style. I'd say, let's go American. How long is that?
Ichiro grinned, and damned if he didn't look like me right at that moment. Pretty much, you thank me for the pie, and then we get on with it?
Thank you, Onisan, for the pie. It is delicious.
He saluted me with a forkful of blueberries. Chewing around the mouthful, he continued.
So, where do we start?
You know I don't want you here. I didn't want you here. I exhaled, confused and unable to unravel the emotions inside of me. Pushing my plate away, I leaned back and rubbed my face. I went for blunt honesty. It pissed me off that he was a nice guy. I wanted him to be an uptight fucking asshole, but the whole genial tattooed guy thing was throwing me off. I wanted to be pissed off. I don't know what to do with you. I'm sorry. I'm not ready for this. For you.
Mikio told me you were direct. Actually, he said you were a blunt ass.
He cocked his head, catching my rueful smile.
Ah, you probably don't even think of him by that name. Mike, then. It's hard to think of him with that name. I don't think of you as Cole. All of my life you've been Kenjiro.
So, you knew about us, then? I wasn't sure how I felt about our mother talking us up to someone else, much less a brother she'd had with another man. She couldn't have known anything about me. As far as I knew, she and my father had no contact. She'd literally packed her shit up and walked out the door without looking back. The last time she saw me, I'd probably been spitting up formula and couldn't see anything but blurry shapes.
I knew. Ichiro nodded. She talked about you sometimes.
Even if she had to leave you behind, she thought about you. So, I thought about you. I'm sorry she passed. That was the truth. No matter who Ryoku McGinnis Tokugawa was to me, she'd been his mother. It was hard, Ichiro admitted softly. She was never really strong, and when the cancer came, I think she just gave in to it. In a lot of ways, she was more a child to me than I was to her. Delicate, that's the word for her. My father is very traditional. I think that made life easy for her. I, on the other hand, am the opposite. He's probably trying to figure out where I came from and how the hell he can return me there. A woman like that would not have survived my father. My stepmother, Barbara, could at least hold her own with the dick. She even matched him punch for punch in the asshole department. Ryoko wouldn't have stood a chance. Is that why she left us? Left my father? It was too hard over here? It was the most pounding question in my head. I couldn't fathom a woman abandoning her sons. It was what I'd struggled with ever since I answered Ichiro's phone call a few weeks ago. The why of it bothered me, nestled into my brain and grew burrs to hook into my thoughts. Living wasn't easy for her. He reached for his cup and cradled it, looking more like he needed to do something with his hands rather than needing a drink. When a couple divorces, where I am from, one parent assumes custody of the children. Usually the other parent doesn't have contact with the children again, or rarely. You are registered with a family's lineage. The absent parent doesn't have any say over you anymore. They just walk out of their kids' lives? Yes, because they are no longer connected, bound to the children. It's very ritualistic in ways. Mother would have followed that. Ichiro picked a blueberry from his dish and chewed on it, sipping his coffee afterwards. Even if she didn't want to, she would have left you to your father because that's what we do. She was very Japanese. That's all I can guess. Did my father do something, or did she just fall out of love with him? I don't know. She never spoke about your father or why she left him, but knowing my mother, our mother, she wouldn't be able to survive outside of her own place. Ichiro shook his head. She wasn't strong, Cole. Physically, emotionally, she always needed someone. In many ways, she was like a little girl. Your father's career would have been hard on her. I can't imagine her surviving here, but she carried you with her. So much so that I knew you. He slicked back the sleeve of his T-shirt, exposing more of his right arm for me to see. The pale of his skin was banished beneath vivid colors and deep shadowy blacks. Covered from shoulder to wrist, his arm was a collage of three animals and natural elements. An Asian stylized rat sat on his upper arm, its fur dotted with bright pink cherry blossom petals. Farther down, a battle-armored horse ran strong past his elbow, its tail flowing down to tangle around the ends of a brilliant-hued rooster. Interspersed between the animals were more flowers, strange, wide-frilled petals of blues and yellows. This is our mother's birth year. I had this done for her. My art, but my teacher did the ink. Pointing to the rat, he smiled again, softer and more wistful than before. She was very young when she went away with your father, not quite 18, and really not very rat-like. Most rat-year people adapt easily to new environments. Our mother didn't. She couldn't stand to be away from her home. I think that's why she finally left. He spoke of a woman I never knew existed. As far as I knew, Ryoko McGinnis died on my birthday, or soon after that. To my knowledge, she'd never held me, never spoken my name aloud. Now here was a man with my mouth and Mike's eyes telling me she thought of me, thought of my brother, even after abandoning us to our father. The horse, that is Mikio. From what I can tell, he's truly a horse, very energetic, very cunning. I like him. He seems strong. You haven't met him? More than a bit confused, I looked at a brother I'd never imagined having. I thought you were staying with him.
I came a day early,
Ichiro admitted softly.
I wanted to see you, to talk to my brother who seems to hurt inside. Just the two of us, without Mikio stepping between us to shove us together. He seems to like maneuvering things. Very much the horse, no?
I don't know. Neither Mike or I are very Japanese. Hell, up until I met my... Jay, ramen and takeout sushi were the most Asian thing I was around. I picked at the pie again, spearing a berry from its guts.
Jay, a friend of mine said something about birth animals once, but I wasn't paying a lot of attention, mostly because I'd been stripping his jeans off of him at the time and suckling at the dip on his belly.
Ichiro touched at the spot where the horse's long tail curved into the rooster's bright red tail feathers.
This is you, Kenjiro, the rooster. Of the two of you, she was most worried about you, that your father would move too much. Rooster are social creatures. They need people around them, long-time friends. She worried you would only have Mikio for company.
He's not bad company, I confessed, once you can get him to stop bossing you around. Ichiro grinned at me.
I've had him pushing at me. He's hard to resist.
A swift kick in the nuts worked when we were kids. Can't do that now, though. He's got a wife. Too much damage there, and they won't be able to have kids. Staring at the art covering his arm, I was at a loss about what to say first.
Why did you ink that on you?
Your birth signs? Ichiro pursed his mouth when I grunted a yes.
Because I didn't know you, didn't have you. I needed you with me, needed Uma, our mother, with me. It was how I kept you close to me. You are my brothers, my family. Even if I didn't know you, I carried you with me.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it makes sense.
My shame soured the sweetness of the blueberries in my mouth. The colors of his ink blurred, and swallowing didn't seem to get the chunk of emotion clear from my throat. I had to look away, focusing on a loose button on one of the pillows. Nico slammed her head into my arm, nudging me from my thoughts, and I looked up to find Ichiro staring at me, his face a calm mask. His hand was still on his tattoo, stroking at the images he'd laid down under his skin. Lacking our faces, he'd given himself as much of us as he could reach, mythical creatures drawn from our births and our places in his life. Would it be so horrible to have another brother? Would it be so bad to have someone else to turn to when life got too tight around me? There was only one way to find out. The ultimate test of family. A few spoken words whispered over the space between us, and I'd know if Ichiro was someone I could have in my life.
Did Mike Mikio tell you I'm gay?
My breath was caught between my throat and my lungs. A trail of fears burnt down through my stomach. I took my gaze off the pillow and met my brother's gaze full on, watching him process what I'd said. He ran his hands through his hair, another one of my own habits. Oddly familiar, but strangely freaky to see someone else's hands. Hands too much like my own. Everything about him was too much of me, too much of Mike. I was having difficulties sifting through the similarities to find the Ichiro bits amid the chaff.
How much do you know about Japan, Onisan?
Ichiro slid forward until he was at the edge of the sofa cushion and reached out to touch my knee. I jumped at the contact, startled by his fingers on my leg.
I know that not all sushi is raw, and rice shouldn't be instant, I said, shrugging.
Other than history, a total pissed-off fucking hell feeling about atomic bombs being used, and what seems to be a weird obsession with a big-headed cat with a bow on its head, not much.
Ichiro laughed. A husky sound rolled with mirth. Sanrio owns Japan's soul, I'm sure of it.
That's who makes the cat? I snorted when he nodded,
Thing gives me the creeps. All of them, their heads are freaking huge. I think it's an acquired taste. Or maybe you have to be a little insane. Japanese women love her, he agreed. Ichiro's laughter soon dissipated from his mouth, leaving his face somber. Skimming his hands over his arms, he said, What I have done to myself, how I wear my life on my skin, isn't welcome in Japan. Too many people associate tattoos with violence, with criminals. I cannot go into a public bath, and if I ride the subway with my arms exposed, people recoil from me. Even as tightly packed as the trains are, they skirt around me and avoid touching me. To them, I wear violence on my skin, and most Japanese are very troubled by that. I disturb their lives by having my art on my skin. That's insane. I bit my lip, suddenly hearing my words from Jay's point of view. Sorry, I'm too American sometimes. It's hard to take a step back sometimes. What about your family there? They know you're not like that, right? My own father is... He paused, taking a breath. My family is very traditional. They pride themselves on being traditional. From my great-grandfather on down, they all believe the bloodline should be pure Japanese, clean of any influence or heritage that is not Japanese. To them, I'm an abomination, an aberration of culture. Who I am, what I have on my skin, what I choose to do with my life, distances me from them. Their doors are closed to me. I am barely tolerated in my father's house, and if he is able to have another son with his new wife, I'm certain he would turn his back on me as soon as the cord is cut. So, I understand how you feel about being shoved out for being who you are, what you need to be. But you chose this, I pointed out, gesturing toward the tattoo. You didn't have to do that to yourself. Life is not always a choice. Your loving men isn't a choice. Not inside of you, he replied softly. Could you have lived a life without men in your bed? Yes. You could have buried your want of men deep inside of you and sought out women. Would you have been happy? Probably not. Your true self would eat you up from the inside, poisoning your blood with self-hatred until you could no longer breathe through the stink of your rotting soul. I nodded, lost in his words. So, you feel like you didn't have a choice. You couldn't be anything but this. You. No, I couldn't be, won't be anyone else but me. He softened the bitterness in our conversation with an engaging smile. Tokugawa Ichiro, inker of tattoos and reviled son of his family. It was confusing. He'd purposefully stepped outside of what had been expected of him, of who he was supposed to be. There'd been a small part of me that still wished that I'd been born straight, a part of me that denied the normality of my homosexuality. It had been a malevolence inside of me, a cancerous longing bred up from society pressuring me, from my parents rejecting me, and an innate need to just be normal. Because being gay, even loving as deeply as I'd been loved and have loved, still wasn't normal yet. I hated feeling that way. I hated having that whispering need to be just like everyone else, slicing up my happiness. Life would have been easier if I had just been straight. But then I wouldn't be me. I wouldn't trade the touch of Jay's mouth on my skin for the world, and my heart thrummed with the thought of touching him again. The normal I'd been judged against had never been mine, never would be mine. It was as much of a normal as anything else, and fuck anyone who couldn't see that, couldn't embrace that as a truth. Maybe Ichiro didn't really have as much of a choice as I'd thought. Why did you do it, then? Why did you choose this? It seemed like such a trivial thing. Tattoos were common here, and meant next to nothing. And in some places, like the hipster-hippie coffee shop across the street, I'd expect the barista to have them, almost as if to validate who they were. In essence,
Ichiro'd chosen to be his own kind of gay, pushing himself out of his family. If you knew that they were going to be assholes about it, why did you do it?
I chose to ink myself, to ink others, because